This is your life, episode 90. Hello and welcome to this episode of This Is Your Life. My name is Michael Hyatt, and this is the podcast dedicated to intentional leadership. My goal is to help you live with more passion, work with greater focus, and lead with extraordinary influence. Well, it's so good to be back. Thanks for your patience. I had a bad case of laryngitis that lasted for almost 2 weeks. And thankfully, my voice is back. I'm no worse for the wear, and I'm delighted to be with you today. In this episode, I'll be talking about how to discern your calling. This is something I get asked about all the time, and I just spoke on this topic at our launch conference in Orlando last week. And so I want to share it with you today. You can find the outline, the resource links, and a complete transcript in the show notes at michaelhyatt.com/90, as in episode 90. I'll be back in a minute to share some thoughts on this topic.
If you have something to say or sell in today's noisy world,
now you can get the inspiration, training, and tools you need to increase your influence and impact.
Platform University, a community of like-minded individuals led by one of Forbes magazine's top 50 social media influencers, Michael Hyatt.
Each month, you'll get access to
The Masterclass, where Michael interviews leading platform authorities.
Backstage Pass, a behind-the-scenes look at Michael's own platform business.
Member Makeover, with specific recommendations you can put to work now.
A live Q&A session where you can ask Michael your most burning questions.
And the discussion forum, where our members support one another in their common quest.
Hi, Michael. It's Linda Henigsberg. My website is changeyouremotions.com. And the thing that I love the most is the generous community in the forum. When I get stuck on something with my online business, I know where to go. I love everything about Platform U, but that's my favorite. Thanks.
Intrigued? Now it is the time to invest in building your own platform.
All right, well, let's talk about calling. And I want to start with a story. As some of you may know, we did a major new member promotion last month for Platform University, and we created several pre-launch videos, as we usually do, trying to add value and add new people to our opt-in mailing list. We had terrific traffic, terrific engagement, and so we were pretty excited when we opened our shopping cart on Tuesday, March the 25th. We were full of anticipation. You never really know how it's going to go till you do it, but we were excited as we began. Well, our goal was to sign up 1,000 new members during this campaign, but on the first day, we only signed up for 134, which was about half of what we needed to do based on our previous experience and the forecasting algorithm that we use. Well, the next day, sales plummeted. We only added 46 new members, and day three was about the same at 48, and then day four, halfway through the campaign, we only signed up 28 new members. Well, clearly, this was not working. We were 4 days into the campaign, and we'd only added 256 new members, or about 50% of where we should have been by this time. Well, I started wondering if maybe our goal was a little bit too aggressive, and I had all kinds of thoughts. I mean, rattling around inside my head were things like this. You know, maybe we've already reached everyone who's interested, or maybe the sales curve is just different for this promotion, or maybe we should revise our goal and come up with something more realistic. So the next day, this would have been day five, Megan, my oldest daughter, and the dean of Platform University gave me a call, and she said, "Dad, we're about 50% short of our goal. What are we going to do?" So we discussed it for a while. We looped in our partner, Stu McLaren, and we got realigned around our calling. And I said to Megan, I said, "Look, we need to add 1,000 new members, not because we need it, but because they need it. My calling is to help leaders leverage influence using traditional and new media so they can have an increasingly greater impact on more and more people. Yes, I'm reciting that because I've got it memorized. But the long story short, we revised our strategy and our copy, and we ended up blowing past our goal, adding 1,543 new members by the time the promotion ended 4 days later. But it was because we got back in touch with our calling. And that's why it's so important to be clear on your calling. You're going to have those times when you encounter obstacles and you want to quit. And if you aren't clear about your calling, you're going to cave in. So in this episode, I want to talk about how to discern your calling so when the going gets tough, when you find yourself in that messy middle, that you can push through. Well, the word calling comes from a Latin word, vocatio, and it means a call or a summons or an invitation. It's the same word from which we get vocation. In fact, the only difference is there's an N added on to the end of it. And though it originated in Christian history and thought, it's often used more broadly today, but it's got four attributes. First of all, it's external. In other words, a call is something that originates outside of you. It pulls you toward it. Number two, it's personal. It comes specifically to you. And sometimes I think that we think, and we get a little gunked up in our thinking that it's got to be original, that what we're called to do can't be something that's ever been done in the history of the world. Well, not true. What makes it unique is that our calling is expressed through our own personalities, through our own set of circumstances, and that's what makes it personal. Number three, it's appealing. It's something that deeply resonates in you. Sometimes we have this idea that if it's a calling, we can't be attracted to it. You know, you hear people say, well, God's called me to be a missionary in Africa, even though I don't want to go. No, I'm not talking about that kind of thing. I'm talking about something that at a very deep level is appealing to you, something that you're attracted to. And then the fourth attribute, it's optional. You've got the choice whether to respond or not. You know, maybe there's that something that's been tugging at you that you know you need to do, that's a calling that you're attracted to, but for whatever reason, maybe because of fear, you said no. Well, it is optional. You've got the choice whether you respond to it or not. So how do you find your calling? Well, people get confused at this point. They think they need to hear an audible voice from God or there's something mystical about it. I don't think so. And here's my premise. I think that you find your calling at the intersection of three components. Now, I want you just to imagine these as three overlapping circles. A Venn diagram is what it's usually called. But each circle represents one component of your calling, and each of these components is necessary, but in and of itself, insufficient. Let me explain. The first component, or the first circle, and imagine this as the top circle, and there are two circles underneath it, but the top circle, component number one, is passion. What do you love? You know, what do you really enjoy doing? What do you look forward to? I love this quote from James Michener. The master in the art of living makes little distinction between his work and his play, his labor and his leisure, his mind and his body, his information and his recreation, his love and his religion. He hardly knows which is which. He simply pursues his vision of excellence at whatever he does, leaving others to decide whether he is working or playing. To him, he's always doing both. That's the thing about doing things that you're passionate about. It doesn't really even feel like work because you love doing it so much. And here's some clues to get you started. What do you daydream about? Or what do you love learning about? You know, when you have a chance to read a book or take a course or go to a seminar or workshop, what do you sign up for? Or here's another clue. What would you do if money was not an issue? Now, I want to give you a warning. Just because you love something does not mean it's your calling. You know, passion is important, but it's insufficient of itself. For example, a few months ago, I bought a guitar, and I think I've told this story on one of my podcast episodes before, where I hadn't played the guitar for years, I hadn't even owned a guitar, and then I got to playing the guitar with my daughter, Madeline. And in the midst of that, my eyes welled up with tears, I was really moved by it. My daughter looked at me and she said, Dad, you have got to buy a guitar. So the next day we went to the Guitar Center here in Nashville, and I was able to buy a Martin guitar, something that I'd always wanted, and just couldn't quite indulge myself in. And I am so grateful that I did. I love playing the guitar. But here's the deal. While I love it, I'm not under the illusion that that's going to be a career or that's a calling. You know, it's an avocation for me. It's a hobby, but it's not my calling. So just because you love something, just because you enjoy it, does not necessarily mean that it's a calling. So that's the first component, passion. Second component, proficiency. This is the idea of competence. What are you good at? For example, my son-in-law, Chris, is really good at doing anything mechanical. Now, I'm just the opposite. You know, I hardly know the difference between a screwdriver and a hammer, but he's the kind of guy that can see something for the very first time, something mechanical, and he just innately knows how to fix it, even if he's never done it before. And it's a gift. And as a result of that, he's a contractor, very successful contractor. He's built a business around that because he's proficient at it. And here are some clues with regard to competency or proficiency. Where do you feel God's pleasure? Remember this movie, Chariots of Fire, when Eric Little would run, he said he would feel God's pleasure. He was competent at it. It was part of his calling. Or here's another clue. Where are you proud of your work? When you look at it, you just kind of feel a sense of pride in the good sense. Another clue. What do your friends say you're good at? Sometimes the people closest to us can see our calling more clearly than we can, at least initially. Another clue. Where have you been acknowledged or rewarded? And by the way, here's a warning. Just because you're good at something does not mean it's your calling. Again, proficiency is a necessary but insufficient condition. When I was the CEO at Thomas Nelson, particularly in the last several years, I was good at it. You know, I was good at finance and the legal parts of the business and HR and administration and all this stuff. But just because I was good at it didn't mean I was ultimately called to it. And I left that position to pursue what I felt like was my calling as writing and speaking. So just because you're good at something doesn't necessarily mean that it's your calling, which brings us to the third component, which is profitability. In other words, is there a market for what you're passionate about and what you're good at? Can you make money doing it? And that was one of the things that I wondered as I left Thomas Nelson. I felt the passion. I thought I was reasonably good at writing and speaking, but I had yet to prove, and I proved it in a limited sort of way, but could I make a living doing it? Well, as it turns out, yes, I've made a very good living doing it, and the numbers keep increasing. The market is there, and the market is saying to me, yes, we're willing to pay you for what you have to offer. So here are some of the clues related to profitability. Is the market willing to pay for what you offer? Another clue, are you comfortable charging for what it is that you do? A third clue, do you have a clear monetization strategy? Just because you're passionate about it or good at it, you got to be able to bring it to the market, charge for it, and have a monetization strategy. Now, here's another warning. Just because you can make money doing something does not mean it's your calling. I have a very good friend here in Williamson County who's a dentist, and he's got a very successful practice. He's excellent at it. And by the way, he makes a ton of money, but he doesn't love it. He's not passionate about it. In fact, he hates his job. He's looking for something else to do. He feels like he missed his calling. So all three of these components are important. Now, if you have passion and competence without a market, you don't have a calling. You have a hobby. And Nashville, Tennessee, where I live, is filled with songwriters and musicians who wait tables because though they have a passion and though they're competent, I mean, some of these waiters are incredible musicians, they don't have a market. So it's really a hobby for them, at least to this point. If you have a passion and a market without competence, you don't have a calling either. You have or will have a failure. And this is one of the problems I had in my first business. I felt called to it, but I just didn't have the competency. I loved publishing. We started a publishing company. People were willing to pay for it, but we just weren't competent. We weren't good at it yet. It was not yet a calling for us. And then to take into consideration the third circle, if you have competence and a market without passion, you don't have a calling. What you have is boredom. And that's essentially what happened to me in those latter few years at Thomas Nelson. As I was bored with the job, I tried to kid myself, but the truth was I was no longer energized by it. I wasn't passionate about it, and I was bored. It really does take all three circles: passion, proficiency, and profitability. Question for you. What do you think, based on those three circles, what do you think you're called to do? Leave your answer at michaelhyatt.com/90, as in episode 90. And let's turn now to our listener Q&A segment.
You have a killer book idea?
The real secret to securing that well-deserved contract is knowing how to write a powerful and compelling book proposal that will leave agents begging to represent you
and publishers eager to sign you.
Michael Hyatt, former chairman and CEO of Thomas Nelson Publishers, New York Times published best-selling author, former literary agent, and publisher, shares his simple and easy-to-follow formula. Writing a winning nonfiction book proposal and writing a winning fiction book proposal are ebooks devoted to authors who are looking to take their book writing journey to an entirely new level. So what are you waiting for? That dream book contract is within your reach. MichaelHyatt.com/book proposal.
MichaelHyatt.com/book proposal.
Each book comes with no questions asked 100% money back guarantee. So what have you got to lose?
First question for this week is from Amanda.
Hi, Michael. My name is Amanda Saxton, and I'm a graduate student at Florida State University. And I know you mentioned that you had a new book coming out about the life plan, and I created my own life plan using your ebook online, and it was really helpful. And I was just curious to know if you had more information about your new book coming out. Thank you so much. I really appreciate all that you do. Bye.
Amanda, thanks for asking. My new book on life planning that I'm writing with Daniel Harkavy, who's the CEO of buildingchampions.com, an executive coaching firm, and my personal executive coach for a number of years. The book is called The Life Plan Manifesto, and we're really excited about it. The manuscript's completely done. It's out for endorsements right now, and we're in the process of shopping for a publisher. We thought for a while that we were going to self-publish it, but the more we thought about it, the more we realized that we didn't really have the time to get into that learning curve, and our time would better be spent doing other things. So we want to let the experts be the experts and go with a traditional publishing arrangement on this book. But we're hoping that the book will be out in early 2015. That's just the nature of book publishing. It takes a while to get it into the pipeline, but I'm really excited about this book. I think it's going to be terrific help to you. Gail thinks it's going to be the most important book of my career. We'll see. But I'm excited about it. And of course, I'll be telling you more about it as we get closer to the launch date. The next question is from Chris.
Hey, Michael, it's Chris Greenwood, aka Manifest. My website is manifest.net, and I am from Orange County, California. My question is, what do you say to those of us that already have a platform or already have an audience but aren't monetizing it properly? And specifically coming from the music industry, I feel like this is something totally missed out on, and there's a lot of artists that aren't taking advantage of some of the things you're teaching, and maybe you can help steer us in certain things that we should implement right away but aren't. Thank you so much.
Well, Chris, I suppose it's obvious, but if you're a musician, you've got to have a website. You still got to have a home base, a place where you can engage your fans, where you can begin to build a mailing list. And I've seen this happen too often where artists are not building an email list and they've got no way to connect with their fans. This is your most important digital asset. And maybe you make a couple tunes available, or you make an ebook available, or something, you know, behind the scenes, something in exchange for that email address to use as an email incentive. So I would begin on my website at the very earliest days by at least putting your albums, tickets on sale, a list of your concerts, anything where you monetize your gift or your calling, I would put that on my website. You know, one of the things that I think you could do on a website if you're a musician is also start a blog and just talk about what's going on behind the music. You know, are you going into the studio? What's the music about? What's the experience like? People that are fans have this insatiable desire to get behind the curtain and see what it's like to be living the life of a musician or be living the life of an artist. So I think you can do that. And there's some of that stuff that you could definitely charge for. So those are just a couple of ideas. The next question comes from Matt.
Hello, Mike. It's Matt Jacobson here of MatthewLJacobson.com. You perhaps might remember my name from publishing days. I think we worked on the Alice Gray project at Thomas Nelson together, but that's been a long time ago. The reason that I'm calling you is I'm interested to know what your opinion is about the best podcasting software, if a person's going to do podcasts, the best recording software that you would suggest for somebody who's really green and just stepping into this world for the first time. So do you have an opinion about that? If you do, I certainly would appreciate hearing from you. Thanks very much. Bye-bye.
Well, Matt, let me just say, first of all, that everything I know about podcasting, I learned from Cliff Ravenscraft, who is the Podcast Answer Man. In fact, that's the URL of his website, podcastanswerman.com. And he's got an entire course that you can go through called Podcasting A to Z, where I think in the course of about a month, he walks you through every aspect of podcasting. And I can promise you, most of the people who are successful podcasters today, and maybe that's too strong a statement, but a lot of the people who are successful podcasters today have been through that course or have been consulting clients of Cliff Ravenscraft. He's very, very influential and at the same time, very approachable. So I would suggest you go to his website to get started. Now, just in terms of, to answer your specific question, back when I used to edit my podcast, and I don't do it today, James Marler, who's my producer, does it. But I used to use Adobe Audition, which is maybe overkill, but it's a piece of software that allows you to edit the audio files. And I recorded directly into a Roland digital recorder. And again, this is stuff that Cliff recommends, and this is how I learned. But I would record the audio file, and then I would edit it in Adobe Audition and get it prepared to upload to iTunes. But it's a little more complicated than probably we have time for today, but Cliff will answer those questions for you. In fact, I think there's a free course on his site that you can get to as well, so I'd suggest that you visit that. By the way, Sarah had a similar question, so let me just play that as well.
Hi, Michael. This is Sarah McKenzie from AmongstLovelyThings.com. I'm getting ready to launch my first podcast called The Read Aloud Revival, where I hope to inspire families to read aloud together. And I'm wondering what your best tips are for people who are new to podcasting. I'd love to hear them. Thanks so much for everything you do. I find your work really super inspiring.
Yeah, again, my best tips, go to Cliff's podcast and listen to it. And by the way, Cliff has his own podcast called The Podcast Answer Man, and I love listening to it. Cliff's just got that attitude, that just positive attitude, and his lookout or his perspective on life I love. So even when he's not talking about something I'm interested in, I just like how he thinks. I like how he approaches various topics, and I think that's a great place to start. The last question comes from Robbie.
Hey, Michael. My name is Robbie Kleinberg, and I create unpredictable trombone music videos at trombonify.com. A question for you about understanding your customers. My analytics show me that on average, my viewers are 13 to 18 years old. How should I change my communication strategy for this unique age group? Thanks for all the great work you do.
Robbie, that is a unique audience. I don't even know where I would begin to answer that question. Well, actually, I do. Here's what I would suggest. Ask the audience. You know, this is what I say to people regardless of what their niche is or what their particular audience segment is the best way to find out about your audience is to ask your audience. Do a survey. You know, maybe in your case, you could get a focus group together, but sometimes people say, well, I've only got, you know, 10 readers a month, or I've got 100 readers a month. I really don't have enough to survey. Yeah, you do. Even if you only got 10 responses, guess what? You know 10 times as much as you know right now. Ask the audience that you're trying to reach. They will be more than happy to direct you if you'll just ask and if you'll just listen. And in some niches like yours, Robbie, you might be able to just put together a focus group and just bounce some ideas against them. Maybe even have an advisory board, make it formal. That'd be really cool to have an advisory board of 13 to 18-year-olds that you would run stuff by. I think you'd probably, rather than guessing and casting around trying to figure it out, I think they would pretty much tell you what you need to do to be able to reach them. Well, that's all the time we have for questions this week. If you'd like to ask me a question, you can go to michaelhyatt.com/question, and you can either leave a voicemail message or email me with your question. Again, go to michaelhyatt.com/question to leave a message, and I'll be back after the break with an announcement and my tip of the week.
Thinking of starting your own blog but worried that your technical know-how is not up to scratch?
The good news is that starting blogging has never been easier.
Michael shares his knowledge with you for free and will show you that 20 minutes is all it takes to have your own blog up and running.
This is John D. Harrison from johndharrison.com. I started out with a free WordPress site, and if I would have applied your advice, started out with a self-hosted site, I really could have saved myself a lot of headaches. Self-hosted definitely is the way to go, and your screencast is the easiest way I know to make that happen.
Join Michael and follow his quick and easy step-by-step video tutorial at michaelhyatt.com/WordPress setup.
Take action now and start blogging today.
michaelhyatt.com/WordPress setup.
Okay, one announcement this week. My business partner, Ken Davis, and I will be hosting the SCORE conference May 5th through 8th at the beautiful Rosen Plaza Hotel in Orlando, Florida. You've heard me talk about SCORE before, but whether you're a professional speaker or you just want to be, this conference will teach you how to prepare with focus, deliver with confidence, and speak with power. And honestly, this conference has had a bigger impact on my career than any conference I've ever attended. It revolutionized my speaking. It's influenced every aspect of my communication, including my blogging and my podcasting. And if you're serious about becoming a better speaker, you simply must attend. However, we only have less than 20 tickets left, and they're going to sell out. This conference always sells out. So if you're interested in attending, you need to reserve your spot now, and you can find out more at scoreconference.tv. Now, let me leave you with one final tip. Often, the right tool can make all the difference in terms of your productivity, even your effectiveness. And that's why I've compiled a free new ebook. It's called Inside My Toolbox, 99 Resources to Make Your Personal and Business Life Hum. And in this short ebook, I share, for example, the word processor I use for all my writing, books, blog posts, podcast outlines, speeches, everything. A little hint here, it's not Microsoft Word. I also share the online system I use to manage my automated marketing campaigns. This tool has literally made me tens of thousands of dollars over the last year. I share the WordPress plugin I use to optimize my blog posts, making them SEO friendly and more likely to get a higher ranking in Google. I share the software I use to manage my seven-figure membership site, Platform University. It's surprisingly inexpensive and very effective. But I also share things like the earphones that I use for running. They have a unique design that keeps them locked into my ear so they won't fall out. And I looked for years for these earphones, but it's all there and more. 94 more resources, 99 in all, in this new ebook. And did I mention it's free? It is, but only for a limited time. And you can get it simply by signing up for my email list at michaelhyatt.com/99resources. Well, that's it for this episode of This Is Your Life. If you've enjoyed this podcast, please show the love by going to michaelhyatt.com/love and tweeting a link to the show. I'd be so grateful if you would do that for me. It does help me get the word out. And thanks also to the following people for leaving a podcast review on iTunes. Joe Wathika, Mark Noldy, KWall03, Decide Today, Justin Levy, Mike Verdon, Katie Hewer, P. Nesset, Guitar Sided Alex, Wild Locket, Yarb Daddy, and Christina Lenz. If you'd like to rate my podcast and get mentioned on this podcast, leave a review on iTunes, and you can go to michaelhyatt.com/iTunes. That's a link that'll take you right there, and you can either rate it or review it or both. But until next time, remember, your life is a gift. Now go make it count.